Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Yep.
Exactly. Okay. I saw a video that had different names for, I don't know, I guess things that we use or want to use or whatever. I want you to guess. What would be a new name for jet skis? A better name.
Water scooter.
A boatercycle. How about astronomers?
Star lookers?
Scientists? You're over this. Emotional baggage.
Hefty memories?
No! This makes more sense. A grief case?
Oh my goodness.
Dentures.
Snap them out, toothems.
I like them. Substitutes. And then when you're charging, if you have an iPhone, it's called apple juice.
That's pretty good.
But yeah, good job. Good job thinking on the fly for that.
That was unique. I appreciate that. Hello.
You seem so over. Ahoy. What's my, I don't know. Ahoy.
And welcome to whatever that was, as well as the Under the Waves podcast. It's a show about all things shipwrecks on the Great Lakes. My name is Andrew, and I shall be thine captain for this week.
Fancy schmancy. And I'm Michelle. Sorry. Thank you. I don't know. Welcome aboard this week's episode. We have a captain's correction corner. We may not always have one, but when we do, we really try to make it worthwhile. So a few things regarding last week's episode. We had a discrepancy regarding the gross register tonnage of the Chester A. Congdon. Most sources claimed it was 6,530 tons. So we're just going to go with that. So Andrew, you were wrong. Also wondered if her original owners named her the Salt Lake City had ties to the Mormon Church. First of all, we know you guys prefer to be called the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, or LDS. So sorry for the colloquial term. Also, it's a little long, so I think I refer to it as LDS in a second here. But secondly, we couldn't find any definitive answers. We know that the name Holmes is an old last name in Ohio, and it also correlates with the LDS Church, but there were no observable ties that we could find. So if you know of
any... Maybe the ties have been buried.
Or sank.
Yep, could be.
If you know of any, feel free to let us know, as the evidence of the names and the naming of the ship, the Salt Lake City, seems to be enough correlation for my mind to take it somewhere, but we're also not wanting to spread misinformation based on a gut feeling. And then lastly, we mentioned the Congdon's first owners being the W.A. and H.B. Hagwood's Holmes Steamship Company. It's Hagwood, not Hagwood. I switched a G and a W, so sorry. Other than that, we should be in ship shape, so... They don't happen often, but when they do, we go hard.
Yeah, when we do it right. So thank you for bearing with us on that bearing through the Bering Straits of Sadness. Well, we've spent a lot of time recently over in the upper and western Great Lakes. It's about time we take a trip back to Lake Ontario. We also took a step way back in time, over 200 years ago, so... Two birds with three stones or something like that. Or two ships with one wave. Too soon. Today, we are talking about the schooner St. Peter. Or Street Peter. Depends on how you're looking at it, but yeah, I think it's Saint.
It's Saint.
It's been a minute.
This is a ship, the Rogue Peter.
Honestly, Rogue Peter is a pretty good name.
Rogue Peter, yes. Rogue-duh Peter,
I heard Rogue-duh, and I went to Rogue.
Oh, I was like, you're like, yeah, that doesn't make sense at all, but sure.
Well, it's been a minute since we talked about a self-powered schooner and not a steamship. The St. Peter was a wooden-hulled, three-masted schooner built in 1873 by Edwards Shipbuilding. At least finished in 1873, as the initial start date is unknown and or was not found by our humble researcher. She was 135.7 feet or 41.4 meters long. The Edwards, sorry, the St. Peter, not the researcher, with a beam of 26 feet, 7.9 meters, and her depth of hold was 12.1 feet or 3.7 meters. Gross weight was 290 tons, noticeably smaller than the recent steamship. Why do I even try?
God dang it!
No, oh, you can't! So you can't say that! It's not okay!
I was saying, sorry!
Our really long researcher is notably smaller than the recent encounter. That was a good laugh. Thank you for that.
Future editing Michelle here. Excuse any background noise. And yeah, sorry, I don't have my mic. I'm not at home. And my computer is a little bit on the fritz at the moment. But this was a funny segment that we wanted to include for laughs and giggles and stuff. It was basically our researcher accidentally put a different letter at the end of steamship. You have the whole alphabet to choose from to kind of figure that out if you want to. If not, just enjoy it for its face value of good laughs and fun times. So, on with the story.
Yes. All right, let me try this again. Now you have another humble researcher at 135.7 feet has gotten this sorted.
Called her how big with her gross weight? No, that was accidental. I don't. The story was weird. Chris. Huh?
I blame Chris.
Sure. This story was weird to research, so I think I just got caught up in that.
I must have. She was 135.7 feet long, or 41.4 meters, with a beam of 26 feet, 7.9 meters, and her depth of hold was 12.1 feet, or 3.7 meters.
Yeah, because that's so much better.
Yes. Her gross weight was 290 tons, and it was noticeably smaller than the recent steamship we've been covering of a couple hundred feet in length. Obviously, but as a good reminder, the St. Peter was propelled via wind, via her sails, and not a triple expansion steam engine.
Sorry.
Womp womp. Very sad. But the wind is pretty good, too. It's a good secondary substitute to a triple expansion steam engine.
It doesn't have the same ring to it.
It doesn't. No, it's powered by nature blowing it along, you know, just moving it down the waterway.
Good choice of words. Thank you.
Triple expansion steam engine. So.
You only do so much.
Because it's been a while, recall that a schooner is, at the most basic definition, a decked sailing vessel with at least two masts and a fore and aft rig, as opposed to a square rigger. The fore and aft rigs could be managed with a smaller crew and were much more useful in the variable winds of the Great Lakes. That was a quote. Most of these schooners had a wooden centerboard, which is a type of droppable keel. That allowed for the ships to cross over potentially shallow sandbars without getting stuck or breaking the keel. Schooners, while the largest ship in their heyday between the birch bark canoe era and the steamship era, were usually smaller in size compared to modern-day ships. Shocker. They tended to be less than 200 feet long, 61 meters, and only a few hundred tons. Lake schooners were more efficient at traveling around the Great Lakes with the ever-changing weather, ease of maneuverability, and better cargo hold than their predecessors, the large square-masted sailing ships of the old days that would traverse around and across oceans. Picture.
Yeah, there's one picture I found, which is further up, of the St. Peter. Of the St. Peter in yeah, real life being towed. Other than that, no photos. So we'll include, if we have space, because we have a lot of after photos for her, of an example of a three-master schooner. But if there's no room for it in the socials, then you're welcome to look it up yourself. It's a pretty standard-looking three-masted schooner.
It's a good-looking three-masted schooner.
Yeah.
How I like dare it. You?
Yeah, I'm not saying it's bad. Standard isn't bad. Standard's just,
it's a run-of-the-mill ship, you know?
Yeah, is it? Think of a ship in a bottle with
three masts.
Sooner
or later, your comments are going to catch up with you.
I'm still waiting for that.
Surprisingly, St. Peter's career lasted 25 years. The lack of known history during that time could be a result of the time period. It was the late 1800s, what can we say? Or because she didn't have any huge recordable accidents, as we have seen in ships prior. Whatever the case, St. Peter's smooth sailing days would come to an abrupt end late on the afternoon of October 26, 1898. She was sailing along southeastern Lake Ontario, just off the coast of New York State, and headed westbound for Toledo, Ohio. On board, she had a cargo of 607 short tons, which is 542 long tons, 551 tons right down the middle. You can listen to last week's episode for a breakdown of tonnage terminology of, quote, chestnut coal, end quote. Quick interjection, what is a chestnut coal? Let's take a step back. Oh, boy. Anthracite. All right. Anthracite is a type of very hard coal that burns fairly cleanly with little smoke output. It's also referred to as the highest ranking type of coal due to having the highest energy density compared to other types of coal. Anthracite burns odorless and steadily from what we could find with a blue flame. It also comes in various sizes, one which is, quote, chestnut, end quote, in size, which is why it's called a chestnut coal.
Measurement.
Chestnut coal, sometimes also called nut coal, is usually slightly larger than a golf ball. I feel like a chestnut might be about smaller than a golf ball, but I haven't played golf recently. It measures around 13 16ths of an inch to 1 and 5 eighths of an inch. Precise. We'll let you convert that one over to non-Eagle standard. This size, along with the next one up, quote, stove, end quote, and the next size down, quote, P, end quote, P-E-A, are the most common sizes found of this type of coal. They are also most preferred for hand-fired appliances. There's so much more information out there about coal. Who knew? Probably coal miners and people of that guild. And we want to welcome those who, like us, are not all that educated in it to dig further into the answer, to fulfill any burning questions you might have about it. That was two jokes in one with digging into it and burning questions.
Way to go.
A great...
Bettering your business takes working with the best. With the James Hardy Alliance, you gain access to leads, training, networking, and support from the number one brand of siding in North America. Achieve new levels of success by joining the James Hardy Alliance today.
A great, rather lengthy source from EH.net will be listed in our show notes on our website. In it, you'll find stories about the Civil War, Coke, which was, what was Coke? Wasn't it something that was mined out of the earth?
You'll have to find out by reading the source.
I remember there's like Coke mines and stuff like that, or anyway. I need to do some looking into, anyway, and the Great American Coal Trade, found at EH.net. So it might be worth an afternoon of your time. Take a look. Yeah. I definitely have to.
Well, we'll link it, because, yeah, it was pretty fascinating. It was long. I didn't finish it, but, I don't know, worth looking into if you want a little rabbit hole that we pre-prepared for you. Absolutely. By we, I mean prepared. I mean, just, like, gave you the link. We didn't write it, but, you know.
Yes. Well, back to the
Led you to it.
Yes. Well, back to the St. Peter. She had left Oswego, New York, and was headed upbound for Toledo, Ohio via the Welland Canal, carrying 551 tons of chestnut coal when she ran into a blizzard. This blizzard came with gale force winds, naturally, high seas, and freezing sleet. The winds were around 70 miles per hour, or 61 knots, or 113 kilometers per hour, and the waves were around 20 feet high, or 6.1 meters. Picture it. Most residential buildings have ceilings of 10 feet or so. That's about a two-story building-sized wall of water coming at you, and it's not just one, it's wave after wave after wave.
That's a lot.
Yeah. I wouldn't have wanted to be out there. To help counteract this, the captain, John Griffin, on board turned the ship eastward in order to try and run with the wind instead of fighting against it and tacking in incredibly sized waves. The brave ship and crew battled the storm for around 12 hours all through the night, but to no avail. In the early morning of October 27, 1898, the St. Peter rolled onto her side and sank. She ended up sinking off of Bear Creek off the coast of New York, just west of Sodus Bay, and around 16 miles or 26 kilometers east of the Charlotte Life Saving Station, located in Charlotte, New York. The worst part, the St. Peter sank just as a life-saving station rescue boat from nearby Sodus, New York, was approaching her. Another source said that the life-saving boat was a mile away. Either way, it was unbearably close.
It was within
close.
Sight.
Yeah. The surfmen on board, recall that surfmen are the dedicated personnel who staffed the U.S. life-saving service stations and performed the rescue efforts to those in distress, were able to rescue Captain Griffin, who they found unconscious and clinging to a spar, or a wooden pole used in the rigging. Unfortunately, the captain's wife, as well as the four other crew members aboard the St. Peter that night, perished with the ship. And just to include it, another source said that 8 people were lost, including the crew and captain's wife. So it was somewhere between 5 to 8 people. Just after the sinking, the St. Peter's masts still stuck out from the water and were a navigational hazard, so they were soon dropped after the storm to prevent any future wrecks. It wasn't until 1971 when the wreck of the St. Peter was found by Bob Bristol. She sits upright on the bottom of Lake Ontario in about 117 feet of water, or 36 meters. She's northwest of Pulteneyville?
I think so.
She's northwest of Pulteneyville, New York, and her deck and lower hull are still intact. Quite a bit of what remained on the St. Peter was recovered in 1971 and placed in a museum located in the Pulteneyville Historical Society. If you live locally or love to travel, you can find this exhibit at 4130 Mill Street, Hamlet of Pulteneyville, New York.
Well, so how fancy is a hamlet?
It's very cute. That's a good name. Oh, I live just yonder, just up yonder at the hamlet. Pictures. Wow, there's lots of pictures.
Yeah, we'll put the pictures in our links. Links are in our socials, which we'll provide links for at the end of the show.
We'll link the links for the resources.
Just
for the
links
socials.
Everywhere.
The St. Peter was listed on the National Register of Historic Places on March 22nd, 2004. 20-ish years later, on September 6, 2024, she was included within the boundaries of the Lake Ontario National Marine Sanctuary. And today, the St. Peter remains one of the most accessible shipwrecks for recreational divers in this sanctuary. Visibility around her is anywhere from 20 to 100 feet, or 6.1 to 30.2 meters, with the average being around 45 feet, or 13.7 meters. Skill level required to dive on this is recommended for advanced open water divers, and according to the Historical Marker Database, hazards for the wreck mainly have to do with the unpredictable weather of Lake Ontario. They advise constantly checking on and taking into consideration weather conditions and changes, and warn that strong currents may be present if the waves are running 3 feet or 1 meter or higher. There are some cool images taken by NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, that we'll include on our socials. NOAA has also used its photos to create a three-dimensional photogrammetric.
I think so. Go you.
Phonics.
You hooked on it yet?
I'm hooked, lined, and sunker. NOAA has also used its photos to create a three-dimensional photogrammetric model of the St. Peter. Thank you for stumbling through that with me. It's here again. Photogrammetry is, quote, the science and technology of obtaining reliable information about physical objects and the environment through the process of recording, measuring, and interpreting photographic images and patterns of electromagnetic radiant imagery and other phenomena, end quote. That was fun. In other words, it's a process of creating a lifelike 3D model using pictures and video, much like what they've done recently with the Titanic. That was a much nicer sentence to read.
It makes more sense than the scientific part of it.
Mm-hmm. Beep, 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 beep. And if you thought the story was done, no siree, we're just getting started. I was wondering, I was like, we're halfway through the page and like done and dusted. You got the beeps, right?
Yeah. What? Oh. No.
Top of the page, what is that?
That's just like a page breaker for me. Were you doing a specific Morse code?
I was trying to just like do the Morse of whatever that wasn't.
Oh. It's a dash that decided to become a bullet point, and then I created more dashes. It's I don't I was know.
Like, why is this? Why four is?
I don't know Morse code except for SOS, and it's not that. I'm glad I have my headphones in so the dog I'm watching doesn't bark. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm glad Denver didn't bark. And if you thought the story was done, no siree, Bob. We are just getting started. Pull up a chair, grab a drink, and let's get cracking, huh?
Wow, what did Dad used to say? Pull up a chair, sit on the floor, let your feet hang?
Yep. I haven't thought about that in 18 years.
You're welcome.
While researching the St. Peter shipwreck, our humble researcher came across another similar ship. Initially, her notes got a bit jumbled together, as per usual, but after straightening out each and every story, we've got the second half of the episode. Some would say, and now the rest of the story.
I don't thought of that one in a while either. That's a little trip down memory lane.
The second shipwreck we're covering today is called the St. Peter. No, it's not a typo or mistake. There really are at least two shipwrecks on the Great Lakes named St. Peter. That checks out. And we're saying at least because at this rate, who knows? It's like the Mayflower all over again. And if you don't recall, please revisit episode 28. This wooden-hulled schooner, the St. Peter, the other St. Peter, was built in 1868, around 5 years before the St. Peter, the other one that we just finished talking about. This one was 90 feet long, had a beam of 23.8 feet, and a depth of hold of 8.5 feet. And that's 27.4 meters long by 7.3 meters wide by 2.6 meters deep to those marvelous mates who are more mindful of the metric system.
This St. Peter... You didn't care for my alliteration?
I loved the alliteration...
You know littering. What? Why did I stop you? You were on a roll. I'm sorry.
This St. Peter's gross tonnage was 119.66 tons, and due to her size, she only had two masts. Also powered by the... Well, the masts weren't powered by the wind. The sails... The boat sails. It moved via wind with sails and sticks. She was built in New Baltimore, Michigan by Peter Perry. And before you think this is the Perry of Perrysburg and such around Ohio... No, this is afterward, apparently. The original Perry was Commodore Oliver Hazard Perry, but that's a different story for another podcast. So yeah, you showed me a picture of not the St. Peter.
I couldn't find any photos of her either. I looked, and there's a lot of... Well, we'll get into that later. But yeah, I couldn't find any pictures of working St. Peter the second, the first, this one.
Peter Perry, the Piper Eater, had a master shipbuilder. He was a master shipbuilder.
Okay.
Peter Perry, the master shipbuilder who picked a piper, was constructed...
We're recording on a different day, and I think we're just on something. Apparently.
Peter Perry, the master shipbuilder who constructed this St. Peter, ended up owning and sailing the ship for its first two seasons of service. In fact, the St. Peter was named both after him, we saw that coming, and for St. Peter, the other Peter, the saint, patron saint of shipbuilders, fishermen, netmakers, and sailors. He also was the patron saint of locksmiths, builders, and stonemasons, shoemakers, those with foot ailments, the papacy, and the universal church, according to CatholicSaintMedals.com. But yeah.
Anything goes.
How appropriate for a shipbuilder to also be named Peter. Preposterous. I wonder if the first St. Peter schooner was covered... I wonder if... I can't see through the tears. I wonder if the first St. Peter schooner we covered was named after the saint himself as well, or some other Peter who was holy.
Whether you got a foot ailment, or you work with locks, or I don't know. If there's something with ships, you could be named Peter.
Thank you.
He's trying to give you a moment to wipe your tears.
If your name is Peter and you don't do any of those, you might want to rethink that name.
I want to rethink your life or your name.
We're just kidding. It has to do with the Saint Peter, supposedly.
Mm-hmm.
Something to ponder with Peter. Upon completion of being built, this Saint Peter was immediately put to work. She was launched sometime in 1868, and in September of that year, she was delivering 3 shipments of 30,000 barrel staves from New Baltimore to Buffalo, New York. And for those of you who aren't up on your barrel building or copper lingo...
Cooper! Copper lingo?
I wasn't sure what that... I don't even know what Cooper means.
They build barrels. Didn't you not know that? Cooper is the people who build barrels.
No. I would imagine them being called barrel makers or something.
Well, Cooper apparently is what they were.
I feel like a chicken coop maker would be called Cooper.
That's too specific.
And for those of you who aren't up on your barrel making or Cooper lingo, barrel staves are the curved individual planks of wood that form the sides of a barrel. Who knew? Probably Cooper.
Went to school with a Cooper.
Oak is most often used due to its durability, water resistance, and ability to infuse desirable flavors to the liquids stored inside.
Can I appreciate how you said oak?
I didn't notice.
Oak?
We're going up on that one.
On that oak.
Oak had emphasis on the oak, huh?
No, you had a lot of emphasis on the oak.
Okay.
I'm going to regret editing this.
But, no, you're not looking forward to it, is what you're saying.
No, I already regret it.
But staves are the carefully shaped, slightly beveled on the edge, planks of wood that are bound together with metal hoops to create a barrel. Or a cooper or something.
No, a cooper makes the barrel.
A cooper made the barrel.
Cooper uses the staves to make a barrel.
Thank you, Cooper, for your contribution. And for added bonus, staves have also been used in the past to create wooden pipelines as part of a hydropower project.
I'm glad you're reading this one. I didn't know they used wood to make pipes in general.
Wouldn't you know it?
Hmm.
Didn't see that one coming down the pipeline. In October of the same year, the St. Peter, the second one, carried 50 tons of coal from Buffalo, New York to Wyandotte, Michigan. A month later, she delivered 115,890 board feet of lumber back to Buffalo from Algonac, Michigan. And then on this return trip, she brought 140 tons of coal to Port Huron, Michigan, right before her winter layup. You could say she was busy. The ship, St. Peter, the second one, was busy.
St. Peter was long gone by then, but the ship.
The ship, the second one.
She, usually.
Peter, okay. The next season, 1869, the St. Peter, the second one, was hauling salt from Oswego, New York to Toledo, Ohio. Shingles from Alpena, Michigan to Cleveland, Ohio. Round trips from Cleveland, Ohio to bring lumber back from who knows where, and basically traversing all of the Great Lakes minus Lake Superior from what we could find. And in a strange twist of fate, on November 20, the St. Peter was traveling a short distance downbound from Toledo to Cleveland, Ohio, with a cargo of 7,000 bushels of wheat. I feel like we've had lots of issues with bushels of wheat being the cargo.
Just stop using wheat.
That'll be simple. On this trip, the ship struck a reef on the east side of West Sister Island, which is in the eastern part of Lake Erie. The hit was drastic enough that the St. Peter quickly began taking on water. Captain Perry on board the Peter attempted to run the ship straight toward Glen. Captain Perry on board the St. Peter attempted to run the ship straight towards Green Island, but the St. Peter sank in only 25 feet of water, coming to rest on her side. She was abandoned until further notice.
Real quick, Captain's Correction Corner in the making. West Sister Island is on the western side of Lake Erie, not the eastern. Sorry, and before all the Ohioans, I almost said Ohio heads, Ohioans get mad at me.
Do you consider yourself to be an Ohio head? You too might be entitled to compensation.
We got a place for you. West Sister Island is on the western side. Aptly named.
So who would have thought?
Don't go back and reread it. I'm just before we catch it for the Captain's Correction Corner, we had it live and in person.
Captain's Correction Cracker here. Just a sniblet of a correction in the middle of it.
A sniblet. I like it.
Throughout the winter, parts of the St. Peter washed ashore near Put-in Bay, Ohio, and in early April of 1970, salvors finally went to work, and within a few weeks, had the vessel raised and towed into Sandusky Bay. Funnily enough, there is a photo of the first...
That's 1870.
I was saying, like, I was thinking, that's a long time to wait.
They just washed ashore for 100 years.
People are out, like, at Cedar Point. It's like, look, aboard.
Thank you.
In early
niche topics, that's why you're here.
In early April of 1870, salvors finally went to work, and within a few weeks had the vessel raised and towed into Sandusky Bay. Funnily enough, there is a photo of the first St. Peter we talked about being towed by a steam tugboat, and we thought initially it might have been this one, but the photo shows three masts instead of the two that this one had. This St. Peter, the second one, flown by Captain Perry. This St. Peter, the second one, spent the 1870 season being repaired at John Oade's shipyard in Detroit, Michigan. There she was thoroughly rebuilt, receiving a new deck beams, new stanchions, hatches, and railings. After being restored, Salver P.L. Oxford sold the now restored St. Peter for a steal of a deal for $4,000, which is $105,000 today. She was bought by J.B. Scott and H.L. Brown initially, and her new home port was Detroit, Michigan. Apparently, records say that the St. Peter's dimensions were remeasured, but the results were not listed anywhere that our researcher could find. Throughout the 1871 season, the St. Peter hauled around salt, coal, wheat, and barrel staves all over the Great Lakes per usual. But like most ships who seem to have an affinity for disaster, this St. Peter, the second one, grounded again on November 23rd while sailing through some thick fog on her way from Buffalo, New York to Detroit. She found herself on Oxford Point near Clay Banks in Lake Erie. She liked grounding in Lake Erie, apparently. Rescued by the tugboat Hector, the St. Peter sustained no serious damage and went on working the rest of her season as well as the next. In 1873, the St. Peter was sold again and her home port changed to Chicago, Illinois. On one trip back to her home port, the St. Peter was caught in a storm that came up suddenly over Lake Michigan on May 29th, 1873. But the damage didn't occur until the next day when the St. Peter arrived in Chicago and struck another schooner called the Cousin Mary. That's kind of ironic that St. Peter had an accent with Cousin Mary.
Sounds like a really weird Southern version of the Bible.
It does. Not sure if the storm caused some sort of steering issue or if the storm was still prevailing at this point, but when both schooners struck, the St. Peter broke all of her bobstays, which are the lines or chains that run from the stem, the front of the hull, to the end of the bowsprit, on the front of the sailing vessel. The Cousin Mary wasn't so lucky, and she sank at her pier.
Convenient for finding her.
Mm-hmm. Well, you see, karma headed out for the St. Peter when, less than a month later, on June 12th, the barge Herschel swung against the St. Peter while she was waiting in a dock slip upriver from the Chicago lumber market. The Herschel caused the St. Peter's bulwarks to be stoved in, and several of her stanchions broke. A bulwark is a solid wall or vertical panel that extends upward from the deck and forms the sides of the ship above the waterline. These are meant to protect the ship from seas and weather, while stanchions are vertical supports typically made of metal and hold up railings or lifelines around the deck. We'll try to post pictures to our socials if there's any room. If not, feel free to utilize our favorite we thought. If
flavored resource.
Flavored resource.
It's like when people say a widow wetter or choo-choo twain or fire twack.
If not, feel free to utilize our favorite resource, Dr. Google.
Doctor's stretching it, but we'll go with Google.
After her repairs, the St. Peter, the second one, started carrying around oats, grain, and corn from Chicago to various ports on the eastern side of the Great Lakes. But her final accident occurred on one such trip. May 5th.
Real quick, I know Andrew keeps saying St. Peter, the second one. It's technically a predecessor of the first St. Peter we covered. There's a little bit, I think, of an overlap, but it wasn't, neither of them were named after each other. He's just saying that because this is the second one we're covering in case anyone accidentally fell asleep and woke up, which what a wild episode to do that too. You're like, wait a second.
St. Peter's floated and it's doing this all this
I thought stuff. I already sank. But yeah, so the other. The other St. Peter.
The second one they weren't, we've talked about.
Yeah.
But the predecessor to the first one.
Yes, but they were not named after each other and it's a little bit of overlap and this is like a whole thing. But so listeners don't get confused. It's not the second one, technically.
Yep, that cleared it up.
Made me feel better, too.
On May 5th, 1874, the St. Peter was headed downbound from Chicago to Buffalo. One source claimed it was headed to Toledo, but we think this is because there are so many sources that try and overlap the two St. Peter's stories, hence why we're covering both the St. Peter stories in the same episode after trying to separate out all the details. The first one was headed to Toledo, the one we talked about first was headed to Toledo when she sank in Lake Ontario, and this one, the second one we're talking about, really the predecessor in chronological order, was more than likely headed to Buffalo from Chicago. Regardless, this current St. Peter that we're talking about, the second one, the predecessor, was headed downbound in Lake Michigan along with 8,000 bushels of wheat. Once again, it's wheat. There it is. There were some concerns floating around when she left about being too overloaded. The local media even picked it up and speculated that the amount of bushels on board was actually 10,000 instead of the purported 8,000. Recall to prior episodes that a bushel of wheat is roughly 60 pounds or 27 kilograms. 2,000 extra bushels could easily add up very quickly. 120,000 pounds to be exact, or 54,431 kilograms. Whether or not the St. Peter was overloaded, not long after heading out into Lake Michigan, she encountered a storm. Approximately 35 miles northeast of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, she began to leak. The captain ordered the crew to pump out water, but even after several hours of this laborious task, water was seeping in faster than could be pumped out. When the water level inside the hull rose to 3 feet deep, or 1 meter, the decision was officially made to abandon ship. The crew climbed aboard the yawl, leaving everything behind. Apparently, after only 5 minutes of rowing away from the schooner, the crew watched the St. Peter violently pitch forward and sink bow first, disappearing under the waves. The crew rowed through the stormy night, arriving in Milwaukee the next morning. Their story concludes with them reporting the loss and catching a ride back to Chicago on another vessel. The end for the crew. But hey, all of them got to walk away, so all things considered, not a horrible wreck for them. Not so great for the ship, but way better for her crew. And according to a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel article about this St. Peter, the second one, the predecessor, the ship was valued at $4,500 when she sank, which would put it at just over $126,000 in today's U.S. dollar. Not a whole lot, but she was a lot smaller than the other St. Peter. Unfortunately for her owners, F. Gilman and G.W. Flood, at the time when she sank, they had only insured the cargo of wheat. And unfortunately for us, the whole breakdown of how much wheat was lost, equaling miles of loaves and unbaked potential, was not written about like it was for last week's episode and wreck, the Chester A. Congdon. So sorry. Today, the wreck of this St. Peter is sunk in deep water around Central Lake Michigan. She was found during a bathymetry survey, whatever that means, by none other than NOAA, once again, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Office of the Coast Guard Survey. The Coast Guard Survey actually is the nation's nautical chart maker, which is pretty cool. They were conducting a bathymetric survey of Lake Michigan, in which they were mapping out the lake's depth as well as the shape of its subsurface terrain. Some pretty cool pictures here.
You too can see cool pictures if you go to our socials. Eerily enough, what?
Go ahead.
I was going to say, eerily enough, the bilge pump, which they were using to, help it not to leak, and she leaked anyways. So, still there. Still in place. You can see it.
Yeah, it's really wild seeing that. It's pretty insane. The St. Peter was found sometime between June 30 and August 23 of 2022, 148 years after she sank. The St. Peter's wreck site was investigated by some Wisconsin Historical Society maritime archaeologists along with ROV operator Crossman Consulting, using an ROV, or remotely operated vehicle, equipped with multi-beam imaging sonar and video cameras. During this investigation, it was discovered that her hull sits upright despite plunging bow first when she sank, and her decks, bulwarks, and railing are actually still intact. Her bowsprit and head rigging also remain fairly as is, but in the wreck, her mast, spars, and rigging were thrown to her port side. Since the St. Peter is so far down, around 450 feet to be exact, or 137 meters, the cabin roof was blown off, but fragments of it remained within the wreckage. She's located about 35 miles northeast of Milwaukee, as we mentioned prior, but her exact location is restricted in order to protect and preserve her. She is in Ozaukee County near
Ozaukee.
I thought I was saying it right based on how you had it pronounced.
It's O, like, oh boy, za ki Ozaukee. Ozaukee. the intro there is a Ozaukee.
Jeez. Ozaukee. It's like when you see a cute key. Who's a good key? Who's a key?
I like mine better. But yours is not as gross.
She is in Ozaukee County near the city of Port Washington. As always, state and federal laws are in place to protect the St. Peter and other shipwrecks. This means divers cannot remove any artifacts or structures while visiting the site. A reminder that removing, defacing, displacing, and or destroying artifacts and sites is a crime. It only takes once to make a lasting difference.
Yeah, why are you looking at me? I didn't do it.
I know. I was just like, I don't know why I said that.
Is that a slogan of stay out of jail?
Only
it takes
you.
Once to make a difference. Shit, me.
Have mercy.
Federal prison.
You wouldn't steal a car. Take only memories, leave only bubbles. Luckily, due to her depth and location, the St. Peter hasn't been visited outside of her initial surveys and investigations. At least, as an On Milwaukee article put it, quote, as far as the Wisconsin Historical Society knows, end quote. Ominous. One source that got basically every single fact wrong about this wreck, but still claims to have dived it, gave the St. Peter the title, quote, the deepest schooner yet found in Lake Michigan, end quote. We won't even list the source because it was that bad. But when we Googled what the deepest schooner in Lake Michigan actually was, we came up with a rather long list of contenders. Who's to say? And if this is true, what a fascinating tidbit. However, the article was taken with a whole lake full of salt.
So real quick, I was like, how could I get so many things so wrong all over? Except for the size, which is 90 feet, and then that it was Lake Michigan, and it was a two-masted schooner. But then I saw another article that they thought they found the St. Peter on the other side of the lake. So the eastern side of Lake Michigan. And that was about in like 350 feet of water. But that was back in 2012, and this one was found 10 years later. So I think they were referring to that one with the knowledge thinking it was the St. Peter. I don't know. But if it was, I can kind of understand that. If it wasn't, they got everything wrong. And even if it was, it's still not the deepest schooner because this other one's at 450 feet. So
I feel like we've seen this before where people are trying to make claims on certain stuff.
Everything is a title. Also, it's just really confusing to research. No one else knows what's going on either, so I felt a little bit better and not so alone in it, but
yeah,
it was a wild ride.
What is true, however, on December 19 of 2024, so really not that long ago, this St. Peter, the second one, the predecessor, was listed in the National Register of Historic Places. 4 months earlier, in August of 24, 2024, she was added to the Wisconsin State Register of Historic Places. Luckily, she was found to be already within the boundaries of the Wisconsin Shipwreck Coast National Marine Sanctuary, which is a protected area of more than 900 square miles, and is one of only 15 national marine sanctuaries in the United States. To date, this sanctuary is home to 36 shipwrecks. This St. Peter was the 80th and most recent shipwreck to be added to the National Register of Historic Places.
The photos are a little blurrier because it's a little deeper and darker and creepier.
Mm. And that, folks, is the tale. Well, the tales. Not of two cities, but of two St. Peters of the Great Lakes.
Yeah, they both ended tragically. Luckily, people were able to walk away, row away from the second one. Row away from the second one. Unfortunately, the first one took everyone but the captain on board. So definitely rest in peace to those people, but I'm glad at least the second one had a better ending for the people on board. But yeah, it was a weird tale. So thanks for telling it so well.
Well, you know, thanks for having me on the show. I really do appreciate it. You know?
It's been a pleasure anytime. Let me know if you want to come back.
Indeed.
Last week's trivia. What Great Lakes state is the fifth largest producer of maple syrup in the United States, as well as maple syrup being potentially one of the oldest agricultural products in this state? We mentioned this usually equates to around 82,000 gallons of syrup produced annually. And for the bonus question, how many gallons of maple tree sap is used to yield approximately 1 gallon of maple syrup? Before we get into it, Andrew, do you have any guesses? How many gallons? Sap to make syrup?
Isn't it like 5?
It surprised me. Final answer?
Sure.
Okay, we'll read on and find out. The state is Michigan. Indigenous people were tapping maple trees way before European settlers arrived in the area, and written accounts of maple sugaring, which is a term used to describe the process of making maple syrup, dates back to the 1500s. Michigan tends to always be in the top 10 of U.S. producers of maple syrup, usually hovering around 5th place. In 2017, Michigan topped out at 110,000 gallons of syrup, but to put a little perspective on it, Vermont, who is the nation's leading maple producer, shocking, accounted for 1.9 million gallons in 2017.
Oh my.
That's goodness. A lot of syrup.
It's a small state compared to Michigan, too.
Yeah. To answer the bonus, it takes about 5.5 days for the average maple tree to produce 40 gallons of maple sap. Is it bath sap?
Maple's too hard to say. Mom, I can't keep saying maple. It's a waste of time. Call it MAPSAP, honey. That's what we call it here.
Good old MAPSAP.
You got that MAPSAP done yet?
Oh, man. 40 gallons of maple syrup, which is boiled down to only 1 gallon of syrup.
Moses.
You're a little off. I personally didn't know this, but other trees can also be used to make syrup as well, such as birch, black walnut, and even pine trees. But they tend to have different flavors and less sugar content, as well as take more sap to make a gallon. For example, the maple tree is 40 gallons of sap per 1 gallon of syrup. A birch tree, which I was more personally interested in, takes 100 gallons of sap to make 1 gallon of syrup. So can you imagine the price tag on that one?
Steep.
So this week's trivia, we have none today because of the double feature episode, and to give you all a chance to digest all the maple syrup we served up this week. So you're welcome. And dive into this podcast next week for more Great Lake and Shipwreck stories. Gently sidle up to and tap that follow button on the socials after perusing the photos that correlate to both the St. Peters you heard about today. That's Facebook, Under the Waves Podcast, and Instagram, at Under the Waves Podcast. You can also send us an email with any questions or stories you'd like to see on the pod, as well as what your favorite flavor of soda is. Or do you say pop, coke, fizzy lifting drink? Anyways, send it to underthewavespodcast@gmail.com. And make sure to check out our website that also includes our show notes page with all of our sources on it. And that's www.underthewavespodcast.com.
Share this episode with a vet. No, not a veteran, though we appreciate your or their service. Send this to your veterinarian. Do you have dogs that require a bit of extra care every so often? We have one of those. Do your cats sometimes need care, despite them telling you loudly, profusely, and quite often that they don't require anything from the lowly human race. Do you require an exotic vet like Michelle did when her hedgehog decided to lose all of his quills, essentially making a very angry naked mole rat? Vets often don't get enough love and appreciation, so show them some by sharing an episode with them. No, we are not pet-based, but we do sometimes talk about animals. Mainly zebra mussels and fish, but that's beside the point. But what are they if not on the verge of animals? If nothing else, we are a nice distraction from all of the fur and nails and fluff that make up their daily work lives. Thank a vet, veterinarian, or a veteran, whichever you deem closer, and thank yourself for sharing an episode with them. We thank you from the other side of your streaming device. We release new episodes every Friday. And until then, fair winds and following seas.
We'll catch you next time under the waves. Bye.
Cheers. Nice.